Imagine for a moment that you are awakened in the middle of the night from a deep sleep by the smell of smoke and the sound of fire crackling, and you quickly realize that your house is on fire. What's your first reaction? Well, if you're living with family, it would probably be to make certain that your family gets out safely from the fire. But if you had a moment, is there something that you would grab to rescue from the fire? What would that something be? Well, I don't have a lot of value that I would like to rescue, but I probably would grab my Bible. And it's not that there's any special sentimental value to this Bible. As you can see, it's pretty old, and the covers are coming apart. I actually bought this when I first graduated from college and have had it for over 30 years. I happen to have a preference for the Revised Standard Version of the Bible. They don't publish that Bible anymore. My wife has actually tried to find a new copy of the Revised Standard Version for me for a gift, but they just don't publish it anymore. So this is it. You can find Revised Standard Versions of the Bible, but they always have the Apocrypha with it, and I'd rather not carry around the Apocrypha with me. So until somebody finds something at some old used bookstore, this is it. So this is what I'll probably grab. But is there anything worth risking your life to save from a fire? Anything in your house valuable enough that you will literally put your life at risk to save? Just a little over a week ago, I was privileged to participate in the memorial service for Sam Robinson Sr. And it was during the service and sharing about his life story that I heard the tragic situation of when Sam was just a little boy, I think it was about 4 or 5 years old, their family house caught on fire. And everyone got out safely, but Sam's father wanted to save the piano for the family. And in the process of doing that, he inhaled so much smoke that he eventually died, leaving the family without a husband and a father. Is there anything worth a human life? We can all say, of course not. And it's easy to say that with our minds, but to actually live our lives that way is a whole different story. And this morning, we are continuing our series of sermons looking at the parable of Jesus by looking at the parable that is commonly referred to as the parable of the rich fool. And if you have your Bible, I invite you to open it to Luke's Gospel, chapter 12. Luke 12, the parable starts in verse 16. But to help set the stage for Jesus telling this parable, I'd like you to look a few verses earlier to verse 13. Luke 12, starting with verse 13. One of the multitudes said to him, "Teacher, bid my brother divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or divider over you?" And he said to them, "Take heed and beware of all covetousness, for a man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." And then Jesus proceeded to tell the parable of the rich fool. Jesus is teaching the crowd, and someone in the crowd says to Jesus, "Teacher, bid my brother divide the inheritance with me." It was common in this time for people to go to a rabbi to seek help in legal questions. And apparently, when the crowd heard this man asking Jesus this, making this request of Jesus, they probably didn't think anything special about it. But Jesus recognized that this man was not seeking justice. This man wanted his way. Bid my brother divide the inheritance with me. It was the custom of this time that whenever a man died, his sons would share in the inheritance, in his estate. But it was the responsibility of the oldest son to divide the estate and the inheritance among his brothers. And apparently, for reasons we don't know, this oldest brother had not fulfilled his responsibility in dividing their father's inheritance. And so this man comes to Jesus and basically says, force my brother to divide up our father's inheritance. And Jesus recognizes immediately that all this man cared about was wealth and possessions. Didn't care about his relationship with his brother. All he wanted was what was rightfully his. And how does Jesus respond to this request? He says to him, man. And what I learned from my study of this passage is that by addressing him as man, Jesus is actually being rather rough, almost to the point of being rude to him. It would be like saying to somebody, hey, you, rather than saying sir or friend. He says, man, who made me a judge or divider over you? Jesus is saying, that's not my responsibility. That's not my place to force your brother to give you your share of the inheritance. And then Jesus says to everyone, take heed, beware. Beware of all covetousness, for man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Life is not about possessions. It's not about things. It's not about wealth. Be careful. And then Jesus proceeded to tell the parable to illustrate the point that he was making. Parable is about a rich man. This rich man has an abundance of harvest. His crop brought forth plentifully. So this rich man is becoming richer. And in verse 17, it says, in my version it says, he thought to himself. The Greek literally reads, he had a dialogue with himself. He talked to himself, which when the people heard this, was probably very, very revealing. In Middle Eastern culture, any time a decision had to be made, significant or insignificant, the common practice is to gather your family and even your neighbors to talk about this decision and to come to some agreement about what course of action to follow or what decision to make. The fact that this man dialogued with himself, there was nobody else for him to talk about, to talk with about this decision about what to do with his wealth, meant one of two things. Either he didn't want anybody around, or nobody wanted to be around him. I've mentioned before that my father was a painting contractor, and over the years he had hundreds and hundreds of clients, and among his clients were several who were extremely wealthy. And I think of one man in particular who was a multimillionaire. He happened to own, he was the exclusive owner of a car dealership. And his car dealership handled a very high-end foreign make of car. And my father ended up doing all of the painting for the car dealership as well as for his home. And my father, in talking about this man, talked about how he actually was not a very nice person, and people did not like being around him because he was quite ruthless in his business practices. And at the same time, not very surprising, he didn't have many friends because he didn't trust people. He thought people would come around only because they wanted some of his money. Maybe this wealthy man in the parable was like that. Didn't trust having people around, or maybe he was such a ruthless, obnoxious person, nobody wanted to be around him. But the fact of the matter was, he had to talk with himself because nobody else was around. And it makes me also wonder about churches that are being planted today in which they deliberately target a certain type of person to join their church. I think it is very important and healthy for a church to have a wide spectrum of people, all ages, all backgrounds, different levels of education, different experiences in life. Because when we come together and dialogue together, we can see things from different perspectives. If all you have are old people, we miss the energy and insights of young people. And the other is also true. If all you have are young people, then you will miss the wisdom of the older ones. We need each other. We need everybody's background, experience, perspective, so that when we do have to make decisions, it can be based on a lot of wisdom, rather than just a narrow understanding of reality in the world around us. This man was by himself, and what does he conclude? He's just going to build a bigger barn so he can store all of his stuff. And what does the Lord have to say about that? Calls him a fool. And it's actually a play on words. If you look at the end of verse 19, where he says to himself, "You have ample goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry." In the Greek, that word "be merry" literally has the picture of relaxing your diaphragm. And when the Lord addresses him as fool, that word "fool" literally says no diaphragm. So he's saying, "I'm going to be merry and relax my diaphragm." And the Lord says, "You're a fool. You don't even have a diaphragm." What's going to happen to him? He's going to die. And what happens to all of his wealth when he dies? Like we always say, you can't take it with you. It will go to somebody else that he doesn't even know. And Jesus concludes this parable by saying in verse 21, "So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." Anybody who centers his or her life around possessions, wealth, the things of this world, is foolish, because this is not what life is all about. In the end, life is supposed to be about God and about the people around us. How does a person become rich toward God? It's actually quite simple. If you put God first in your life, if you choose to accept the gift of grace that God offers to us in his Son, Jesus Christ, then we become rich toward God. God is King of the universe. And because he's King of the universe, creator of all things, everything belongs to God, right? And when we choose to become a child of God through Jesus Christ, what does that make us? Sons and daughters of God, princes and princesses of this universe. What the Father owns, he now says, you own too. What I own is yours. We become rich. And this richness is not so that we can feed our selfishness. It is so that we can use what God has entrusted to us to bless others. Put God first, put others before yourself, and then you will be rich. All the money in the world will never bring happiness. It is in service to God and to others that we experience true joy in life. Life is not about the abundance of things. Things are still important. We need things in order to live. But those things, used properly, will bring richness that can only come when we put God first. Remember what Paul said in 1 Timothy 6, chapter 10. It is the love of money that is the root of all evils. Not money, but the love of money. When we love money and use people, life becomes miserable. We are to love people and use money, just the opposite. There is an ancient tradition about the city of Jerusalem, and this ancient tradition involves a story about a father with two sons. One son was extremely wealthy, but he and his wife had no children. The other son was extremely poor, but he and his wife had many sons and daughters. This father was growing old and recognized that he was at the point of death. So he called his two sons to his bedside and told them that he had decided that he would divide his wealth equally between the two. And his wealth involved a piece of property. And he told his sons that he had instructed the servants to place a special marker right in the middle of the property. That morning, the father died. And according to Jewish tradition, the two sons made the appropriate arrangements and had their father buried before the sunset that evening. That night, neither son was able to sleep. The rich son tossed and turned, thinking to himself that what his father had done was not fair. It was not just. He says, "I'm rich. I have everything I need. And yet my poor brother, his children, eat food for the day and then have to trust God for their food for the next day. He needs this property more than I do. But I don't want to shame my brother." So he decided that before sunrise, he would go out to the father's property and move the marker so that his brother would receive the greater portion of the land. When he decided that, he was able to fall asleep and slept peacefully for the rest of the time. While he was going through that, his brother was also unable to sleep. And he tossed and turned, thinking the same thing. What my father did is not fair. It's not right. I have the joy of all of these children. My brother has the shame and embarrassment of having no sons to carry on his name and no daughters to comfort and care for him in his old age. I am so rich and my brother is so poor. I will go and take that marker and move it so that my brother can at least be comforted by knowing that he will have greater wealth. And when he made that decision, he fell asleep and slept peacefully the rest of the time. Before the sun rose, the two brothers got up with the intention of moving that marker. And in the darkness, they both happened to meet at the same time at that marker, looked each other in the eye, and realized why the other was there. They embraced in tears, and tradition says this is where the city of Jerusalem was built. The city of God was built on the concept of putting others before self. What would this church be like if we chose to put other people before ourselves? What would your family be like if everybody in your family decided to put the others before self? When we do that, we will be rich towards God, and we will be his witnesses in this world. The decision is ours. Are you going to stock up treasure for yourself or be rich toward God?